the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello there from Bedford. How are you all? Did you all have a great weekend? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by the Mighty Kraken, the best place to buy and sell Bitcoin. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today I've got an interview with pornographer Holly Randall to discuss financial censorship and learn a little bit more about the adult industry. But before that, I do have a message from my show sponsors, and remember, don't skip the ads. Make sure you check them out. Without the sponsors, I couldn't do this. So first up, we have the amazing Dropbit, the best mobile wallet in the business for Bitcoin. And as the year closes out, I do need to send my love out to the team and congratulate them on an amazing year. Have you got this app yet? Have you downloaded Dropbit? They've got so much packed in this app. You can text Bitcoin to people. You can tweet Bitcoin to people. They have added Lightning support, and the process for moving between your Bitcoin and your Lightning wallet is the best I've seen. They have also added support for Betch32 addresses, and you can now even buy Bitcoin in Dropbit with your dirty fiat. Seriously, don't be a loser. Download Dropbit and hit me up on Twitter if you want me to unlock your Lightning wallet. Just drop me a DM and I will hook you up. It is available for the iPhone and Android. Just head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. Also, I need to welcome my new sponsor, Scott Orford, and his company, Crypto Mining Tools. Scott is a Bitcoin mining consultant, and I want you to check out his Bitcoin mining profitability calculator he made, which is available at cryptomining.tools. You can enter your estimated uptime and get realistic profit projections. And it also includes the impact of the Bitcoin block halving reward coming next year, which we're all excited about. And there is an interactive hardware comparison chart as well. As an ASIC mining equipment broker, Scott will help you make data-backed business decisions. He can help you find hosting or raw power and land to get your miners up and hashing. If you want to talk to Scott, hit him up on Telegram or Twitter at OfferedScott, which is OfferedScott, or visit cryptomining.tools, which is CryptoMining.tools. And lastly, we have Wire, just a few weeks ago on their sponsorship, so let's make it end with a bang. Make sure you check them out. Help the show, help Wire, because they are helping companies across the space offer Bitcoin onboarding. So whether you're a solo developer or a large team, if you're looking to simplify user onboarding and offer users a fast and easy way to purchase Bitcoin, then you really need to talk to Wire. They've been killing it since 2013. They focus on all the bullshit, all the compliance, liquidity, and payments, so you can focus on building your core offering. Your idea could be the next killer app, so don't let the regulators kill it. You want to find out more? Head over to sendwire.com, which is sendwyre.com. Okay, so onto the show, and today I have pornographer Holly Randall on the show. And the adult industry is something I've been learning a lot more about recently. And I need to give a big shout out to my friend, Ali Eve Knox, who I've previously interviewed on the show. And she's been helping me network within the industry and kind of understand some of the nuances of what goes on. It is a fascinating industry. Trying to avoid getting stuck in the taboo and the childish, giggly side of it, this is a legal industry which faces a lot of problems, a lot of financial censorship. So yes, a big shout out to Ali. She's been hooking me up in the industry, introducing me to lots of people, and it's because of her I got to do this interview with Holly. The financial censorship side of the adult industry has come to the fore again recently because we had PayPal recently refuse to pay workers who were using Pornhub. And this is a regular problem throughout the industry where banks will close accounts or people just can't get access to certain services. So with Bitcoin's censorship-resistant properties, it seems like an obvious choice is for businesses within the porn industry to start looking at Bitcoin as a payment method. So in this show, Holly and I discuss how she got into the porn industry, how the industry has changed over the years. You know, we talk about pre- and post-internet. We do talk about financial censorship. And yeah, we talk about a few things that kind of maybe made me a little bit blush at times during the interview, but all good. Very good to learn about this industry. And hopefully I'll be getting some more people on as well. Anyway, listen, I'm off to Uruguay later today. I'm going to be flying via Argentina and I'll be at LeBitConf. So if you're there and you want to say hello, give me a shout. I'm then going to be heading out to Bolivia for a couple of days before I head back to Argentina for a couple more days there and then heading home. If you have any questions, you want to hit me up, my email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.
That's the worst thing about doing a podcast is that when you hear back your... I don't listen to mine anymore now. I've finally got it, but I used to listen to them back. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, fuck, I sound like an idiot.
I feel the same. And all the likes and the ums and the you knows.
So my engineer edits those out for me.
Oh, you fucker.
Have you got an engineer?
I do, but he doesn't go that far.
Well, you should. Right, that changes everything.
Well, the thing is that I also record them on video, okay. And I put them up on YouTube. It's not going to work. So it would be so drastically different.
I'm bringing video in next year.
Yeah. Especially for what I do, you know, I interview a lot of very good looking women and, mm-hmm. you know, people like to see them. And actually, it was a fortuitous decision because I now have a channel on Adult Time that I'm actually making revenue off of.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because your industry has been under attack for making money.
It has. And one of the things I cannot do with my podcast is monetize it on YouTube. Because they won't let me, because even though I'm obviously not shooting porn, because you can't put that on YouTube, even talking about it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's fucking bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, we're going to get into that, and we're going to talk about Bitcoin. Oh. We're going to share some knowledge across, and we're going to quickly talk about something you wanted to ask me.
Yes, I wanted to... So I know nothing about Bitcoin.
Okay.
And a friend of mine told me that I should invest in XRP mm-hmm. because that is going to be the mode of currency that they're going to use to do bank transfers that don't go through some kind of middleman like it does now.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said that it's really low right now, but he predicts it will skyrocket. It's been approved in certain countries and that it is a life-changing investment is what he told me.
Yeah, that's what scammers tend to say. So it's a scam. Don't buy it.
Okay.
Just ignore it.
Well, he's a friend, so he's not trying to scam me out of anything. He just is, at the worst, is he's giving me bad advice.
He's spreading the scam without knowing it. Involuntary. So it's very simple. It's all about Bitcoin with cryptocurrencies. It's the only one that matters. It's the only one that's important.
I have some Litecoin that a friend bought for me for as a gift.
Well, I mean, I would say focus on Bitcoin because of, it's like the simple way of explaining it is the only need for a blockchain is to be decentralized. So it can't be switched off. So mm-hmm. it can't be turned off by the government. And the only one that really achieves a high level of decentralization is Bitcoin. Mm. And most other things are centralized, so mm-hmm. they can be switched off by the bank, or they can be compromised, or they've got central decision makers. Bitcoin is pretty much the only one that isn't, so we say focus on Bitcoin.
And it's untraceable in a way, right? Because you know those people that are always trying to blackmail you online, always want to be paid in Bitcoin?
Well, it's not entirely, so it's pseudo-anonymous. So as soon as you convert it into dollars or pounds on an exchange, and you have to have your details, they'll know it's you.
Hmm.
Now, if I was to sell you some Bitcoin, say for cash, and mm-hmm. you would have a separate wallet to send it to,
mm-hmm.
and then you sell that for cash to somebody, then that's untraceable.
Right, okay.
So there are ways.
Right.
It's definitely interesting.
But
let's find out about your industry first.
Yeah.
So, Holly, Ali said we had to talk.
Yes.
And she sent me your tweet the other day. But for people who won't know you...
How could you not know who I am?
I mean,
I'm just so famous.
Well, I knew
I
can't name.
Believe you got through the paparazzi throng in front of my house.
Well, I got through your assistant. But you should tell people who you are and what you do.
Okay. I'm Holly Randall. I'm a second generation female pornographer. I also host a podcast about the adult industry. And I produce, I direct, and I also photograph movies, adult content. I've been doing it for over 21 years.
But you're not a performer, right?
I'm not a performer, no.
Maybe a little bit on Snapchat.
Yes, that's actually kind of a new thing. So yeah, I've started posting like some nude stuff here and there. It's kind of a long story. It goes back to some nudes that were accidentally released online, which nobody, of course, believed that it was accidental. And kind of once that got out there, I was like, well, as everybody knows, when something goes out on the internet, you can't take it back.
Nope.
So I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to own this and I'm actually going to promote this and I'm going to make money off of it. And I did. And, you know, of course, too, there's the consideration of, well, my boyfriend didn't care because I talked to him and he didn't care. My parents obviously don't care because another thing about me is, as I said, I'm a second generation.
Your
mother
right?
Is Suze Randall. A fellow Brit who was one of the first women working behind the scenes in the adult industry. And her and my father built a business together, and I started working for them when I was 20. So that's how I started in this industry. And my mother posed nude. She shot herself for Playboy. She shot herself for Hustler. So, you know, I come from a family that certainly wouldn't frown upon it.
How old were you when you were kind of aware of all of this?
Yeah, so I get this question all the time. Yeah. And my answer is I don't really remember this moment, this epiphany that I had. You know, my parents are very honest people and they don't believe in the shame that a lot of people have around sex. They're very open, they're very liberal. And so from a young age, I knew that, from what I can remember, I knew that, you know, what mommy and daddy did was they basically made pictures and movies for grownups and it wasn't for me. And, you know, at that age, I didn't care. I was busy running the Unicorn Club. it was when, of course, I hit puberty that I became a little bit more interested and started stealing the Penthouse magazines out of my, you know, out of the office when my parents weren't looking. But, you know, it was never like a central part of my childhood. You know, my parents were parents first and I guess pornographers second.
So you've witnessed the transition of the industry from pre-internet through internet.
Yes.
You know, because there are, even in Bitcoin, I meet people who don't know a time of no internet.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I remember it. I always say that, you know, I remember pre-mobile phones. I remember pre-internet. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very different world.
Absolutely.
And it's changed your industry a lot.
Yeah, completely. I started working for my parents about when the time the internet hit. That's actually why they needed me, because they launched SuzNet, which was my mom's website. And they launched, I think, a month before Google launched. That's how long ago it was, like in 98.
Wow.
And yeah, I know, right? A month before, a month after. And so I came in at the very beginning of the internet and they put their website online and it just exploded. They didn't know what they were doing. They had, you know, a website designer who would take 2 weeks to design a banner and they thought that was normal because they had no idea. But the money was just rolling in. And so they were extremely overwhelmed and they asked me to come just help out in the office. And initially that was what I was going to do. I was going to do that while I was transitioning from one school to the next because I was going to be an English teacher. And I just stayed.
And when you say pornographer,
mm-hmm.
Is that like a broad term for working in the industry?
It is. I mean, people, that's such a dirty word to so many people, right? So a lot of people will say they're an erotic artist or they're an erotic movie director or a, you know, feminist adult director or something like that. You know, they try to use these words that kind of softens the job, I guess. But I'm just so jaded that I'm just like, yeah, I'm a pornographer. I mean, it's ultimately what I am. I create porn, so.
So you're a photographer?
I'm a photographer, yes.
Do you a filmmaker?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, now you have to do everything. I started off as just a photographer.
Not me.
Not you.
Yeah. You said you have to do everything.
Oh. One has to do everything these days. Yeah. You can't just be a photographer. You won't be able to make a living.
Right. Okay. So one of the interesting areas I didn't cover it with either Ali or Astoria is the change from pre-internet to post-internet.
Right.
And it seems to me that it was kind of like it was a great industry pre-internet.
Mm-hmm.
The internet came along and then like financially it was great to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just had everything's been eroded and made it very difficult to make money from films. Is that like a fair broad?
Yeah, but it also depends on who you're talking about because the roller coaster has been different for everybody.
Okay.
So before the internet came along, the adult industry was a very small insular community. It wasn't that easy to get into the industry. Obviously, if you were going to either star in or direct an adult movie, you had to have a distributor, right? And that distributor would have to hire you to make the movie. It wasn't like now when the internet created this platform that anybody could create content and put it out with ease. You had to have somebody who would sell your movies. So you had to have somebody that would hire you. And you know, the adult industry was, like I said, a small community, so it wasn't that easy for outsiders to come in. And it was, you know, there's a lot more stigma around it, so there were a lot less people in it. But it was, you know, it was profitable. DVDs were, you know, were selling. I mean, porn has always been profitable in the sense that people always will consume it. Porn has always been something that people consume a lot of. But back then, obviously, you couldn't really steal it as easily, right?
Plus, going from scene to scene, DVD by DVD, yeah. It's a bit of a pain in the ass.
Yes, exactly. It's an expensive habit to have to watch. I would imagine, I mean, obviously, back in the DVD era, I wasn't really watching a ton of porn because I was younger. But I would imagine that people just had a few, most people had a few favorite movies that they would watch over and over again, as opposed to now you just go on one of the tube sites and you just have thousands and thousands and thousands of movies and clips and scenes to choose from. So you don't ever have to watch the same thing twice.
Endless, unlimited porn.
Endless, unlimited porn.
So I've heard mixed feelings about the tube sites from some people who said they're absolutely terrible. They've made it very, very hard to make any money in films. And then I've heard other people say, no, it's been very good. It enables anyone to get distribution and to build a profile. And if they do a good enough job, they can send them to their own website and build up a direct relationship. So it's very good advertising. And I've also noticed recently, there seems to be I've seen a more recent push for more higher quality pornography.
Yes.
That seems to be separating itself from a guy with a video camera in a car or something.
Right. Yeah, that's been an interesting change as well, how the internet has changed how we produce porn and what people are interested in. But I can get back to that later. So to your question about the tube sites, it's so hard to say. Yes. I mean, look, piracy was around before the tube sites came along. It was a problem before. Before the tube sites came along, people were going on file sharing websites and stealing porn that way. But obviously, you had to have a little bit more technical know-how to be able to do it. The average person generally didn't know. So when the tube sites started, it was very easy for anybody to just watch free porn. So yes, it hurt the industry in a lot of ways, but one needs to adapt to changing technology. And there's just no way to stop it. And it's actually, in a strange way, it's, I think, come around and been more beneficial for the models, because now people, you know, people are so oversaturated with porn because obviously they can see whatever they want for free. I think now that, and this speaks overall, I think, to society as a whole, people are craving like a more personal connection. So that's why models are doing really well with things like Snapchat. This is why camming has become such a big thing. This is why models creating their own profile, like say on Pornhub, and selling videos directly to people has become more popular, because people crave a feeling of connecting with their favorite performer. And you can't, one thing you cannot steal is like that personal connection, right? So if a model is streaming live to you, like in camming, you can't steal that personal interaction where she says your name, she talks to you directly. So that's kind of brought up this whole new wave of porn, which has been really interesting. So, I mean, I would say, yeah, the tube sites have definitely hurt the industry in some ways, but you know, it's strange because now it feels like the industry is actually doing better. Like, we went through a period where a lot of companies were shrinking budgets, were going out of business, and that's still happening to a degree. But there's a lot of companies that are now spending a lot more money on producing these really high-end cinematic films. And people are clearly paying for it, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to make them. And I think people who really care about the product that they're looking at, and people who really have a particular kind of porn that they want to see, and a high quality porn, those are the people that are willing to pay for it. Because yes, you can go on any tube site and you can watch a bunch of free videos, but they're all pretty crap. The tube sites have now finally come up with a way to easily take down stolen videos. Like, if I go on Pornhub and I see something of mine that's stolen, I just contact, like, I have a direct contact over there and he takes it down immediately, or he moves it to my channel where I get money for people to watch it.
Okay, which is better?
Which is so much better. So I'm actually making money off of the tube sites now.
The other thing was, when I was a kid and we used to steal a porno from one of our mates' dads,
right,
or whatever, the films were productions. They were,
right.
But they were movies,
yes,
rather than scenes. They were,
right,
movies, you know, with scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously not Hollywood production, but right, they were movies. That seemed to be lost for a while.
Yes.
And again, you know, in the rabbit hole I've gone down kind of researching, which is probably going to make people make laugh and joke and make accusations, but and hopefully my son won't be listening to this one, but I've noticed this increase in like the quality of the production. It's like a reemergence, but the difference this time, actually, it's even better. Rather than like a cheesy film with a cheesy script, they're actually quite sexy productions.
Yeah.
With, I would say we're kind of very good lighting, yeah, very good costuming. Is any of this been a reflection and a response to, say, what happened with the Christian Grey books? Has that changed anything?
I don't think so in the adult industry. I mean, S&M, bondage, fetish has always been a big niche for us. The only new studio that is doing those kinds of scenes that is noticeable is Deeper, you know, that Caden Cross is directing all those movies, and she's really fantastic. But, you know, S&M and fetish has been a big niche for a long time. But it's gotten, you know, with these higher production values, it's sexier, it's glossier now than it used to be.
I think the point I was trying to make, has that made sex more mainstream?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, that's possible. I think that the society is definitely opening up about sex, and we're talking about sex more, and we're talking about women enjoying porn more and enjoying sex more. And, you know, trying to shed the shame and the stigma of pornography and trying to really change people's minds about what porn is, because there's so many different kinds of porn. So, like, for example, when you were saying how now, you know, we're having this kind of porn renaissance right now, where this new cinematic type of feature is really coming into play. So, as you said before, the pre-internet era, all the porn movies were movies, and they had a script, and they were features and you know, cheesy, but whatever. Though if you think about it, like, kind of all movies back in the 70s, for the most part, were a little bit cheesy.
Yeah.
I think that just, like, we've become more sophisticated as an audience.
That's true.
Overall. So when the internet came along, it really changed things, because suddenly it allowed people to be able to access any kind of content that they wanted to. So beforehand, you had to go out and buy a DVD, right? Or you had to order a DVD. So you had to take this tangible product with you into your home that you might have to hide from your wife, you might have to hide from your girlfriend, your boyfriend, whatever. And you would have to put it in the DVD player on a TV and, like, hope nobody was home. You know what I mean? It wasn't that easy to access. So I think people would be a lot more careful about what they would watch. Also, there wasn't as much available. In America, we have obscenity laws that vary from state to state. So, for example, Max Hardcore, who went to jail for obscenity, he went to jail because he had a DVD that had a sex act in it, which was illegal in certain states. I'm probably wrong about this, but say like Alabama. It was a scene that had anal in it, and somehow that DVD, which is edited differently for different states because of, like I said, different laws, was somehow distributed in Alabama. And so because it was distributed in Alabama, again, I'm making up a state, I'm sure I'm wrong about this, he got busted for obscenity. So that's what sent him to jail, because, like, anal is illegal in Alabama.
Illegal?
In Alabama.
In porn, or just illegal?
I think in general, and especially in porn. And again, I'm just saying Alabama.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I could research this.
Yeah, look it up. I'm probably completely wrong, but you'll see what I mean. So it was very much not anonymous watching porn. So when the internet came along and you could suddenly anonymously access basically any kind of content that you wanted, producers saw the demand that people had and the need for all this crazy porn. And I think because you could make it, because again, before you had to be careful about the kinds of stuff you were shooting, people started shooting more and more hardcore stuff. And I think people watched it and consumed it just because they'd never seen it before. You know, this was the kind of porn that wasn't available before, you know, triple anal and shoving a baseball bat up your butt and, you know, all kinds of, like, it's like a circus act. And so that became very popular for a while. And I remember, actually, we really struggled with that when I was working for my parents at Suzanette, because we've always produced high-end glamour erotica, and suddenly all of these other companies that were shooting this really hardcore stuff, like Evil Angel, were doing really well, and we felt like, do we need to start shooting triple anal scenes in order to compete? And that just wasn't our style. So
when did double anal not become not enough?
when triple anal was possible, I guess. I don't know.
What's the world record? Is there like...
I think you can only do three. And I've actually had this in-depth discussion with porn stars about this, because only because you can't fit that many guys around a butthole.
I mean, I'm wondering, that must hurt.
You know, you'd be surprised. Some girls have a much easier time with anal than they do with vaginal.
Okay.
Because I believe your anus can actually, because it's a muscle, it can stretch more than your vagina can.
I really do hope my son's not really listening to this.
Put your mind to it. It's all mental.
Yes.
It's like okay. The force.
Okay. So I mean, I didn't think we'd get into triple anal this early, but we're here now. But I guess what you're saying, like, the internet allowed for niches and sub-niches, yes, and sub-sub-categories, yes, and it kind of opened up a whole kind of plethora of different things. But it seems like, therefore, the industry moved to a lot to be scene-based.
Yes. Yes. Because people wanted... all they wanted to consume was the sex.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's face it. Most people fast forward through the dialogue when they watch a movie.
Yeah, but I would say there's the slight separate issue there. If it's the more consideration for the setup of the whole scene, it mm-hmm. doesn't matter if they're skipping through it. Mm-hmm. You can have a high production, well thought through scene, and you yeah. can have a in the back of a car, let's go for it kind of scene.
Right.
And I think generally everything just moved to the latter for a while.
Yeah.
And myself, it's just kind of, it's kind of boring.
Mm-hmm. The setup in the back of the car.
Yeah, well, anything just like, I don't know. I think porn got boring.
Mm. Yeah. It became very much the same. And, you know, like circus acts kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think a lot of people started to feel that way. And so then people really... then the trend started to move back towards more cinematic movies, not even necessarily with a storyline, but just more beautifully shot. I think what made a huge difference actually was when the DSLR cameras came out and were able to shoot video.
Right.
Because they enabled you to kind of shoot something that looked so much more cinematic than just shooting on like a high-8 camera, which is what we were all doing, mm-hmm. without having to buy an incredibly expensive, you know, actual cinema camera or rent one for an obscene amount of money.
Now you got these, you got the iPhone.
And now you've got the iPhone. So the evolution of technology as well, I think, really helped facilitate a change in the way that porn looked. And actually, I remember, I believe it was XArt who really started to create that more cinematic look. And they were one of the first people that I knew who shot with those DSLR cameras. And I remember thinking to myself, that's crazy. You got to use automatic focus. You can't hold it. You got to put it on a tripod. That's nuts.
What the fuck are you doing?
What are you doing? And then, of course, it looked fucking amazing. And then we started doing it. And I remember actually the first time I shot with a DSLR camera for video, and I was like, this looks so, I'm like, I look like I'm shooting a real movie. It was a big difference. And then lately, you know, the scripts have improved, productions have improved. You have some really talented female directors who are producing these incredible movies, with really interesting storylines, really well shot.
Jackie St. James?
Jackie St. James, yep. Brie Mills, Caden Cross. There's just some Erica Lust.
And do you find... okay, I'm going to make a gender assumption here, but I still accept, like, men and women are different. Mm. I'm going to assume men tend to focus on making what men want.
Yes.
And I guess a growth in female directors has led to them producing more of the kind of entertainment that women may want, which therefore is less of the just bang, bang, bang.
Right.
A bit more considered. Is that a fair, slightly... gender-based assumption?
I think so. I think that a lot of times women want more of a motivation behind the sex. We want to know why they're having sex. We want to know what are the emotions behind it. What is the story behind it? You know, the idea of just seeing a penis go inside a vagina like multiple times is just not interesting. For me, like if I watch a film, it's interesting is the story. And will the characters bring the story into the sex? Because a lot of times the characters just, they play whatever roles they are. And then once the sex starts, it's like you just throw the characters out the window and they're just having sex. So when they keep the characters in the scene and they refer back to whatever the scene is about during the sex. That's hot to me.
Next up, I talked to Holly more about financial censorship within the porn industry. But before that, I have a message from my amazing sponsors. And first up, we have the Mighty Kraken. Yes, the mighty, mighty Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. And let's be clear, let's be really, really clear on why Kraken are the best and consistently rated the number one exchange. First up, they are the most secure exchange for trading Bitcoin. They've never been hacked. No hackers ever got in. No one's ever gone in and stolen any of your Bitcoin. So you can trust them more than any other exchange to protect your Bitcoin. And also, if you're an advanced trader out there, they've got the best account management in the business. And they also have an unrivaled suite of trading products. Let's go through them. Firstly, they've got Kraken.com, which is the best place to buy, sell, and trade digital currencies. They've got margin trading with up to 5x leverage. They've got futures. They've got indices. They've got the Kraken OTC desk. And if you haven't listened to my interview with Nelson Minio from the Kraken OTC desk, definitely go and check that out. They've got CryptoWatch, where you can trade multiple cryptocurrency exchanges from a single platform. And they have just released the beautiful Kraken Pro, a mobile-first app so you can trade Kraken wherever you want. Find out more by heading over to Kraken.com or download the app, which is available for the iPhone and Android. Just search for Kraken Pro, which is K-R-A-K-E-N-P-R-O. And lastly this week, but definitely not least, is my friends BlockFi. Yes, the amazing BlockFi. And I'm going to be catching up with them this week. They are going to be out at BitConf. I'm going to be hanging out with Zach and Flory. I'm going to be finding out what's coming up for BlockFi next year. Going to have another big year with them. Lots of cool things are going to be happening. And did you listen to my recent show with Tua de Misa? I imagine most of you did because the downloads for it have been crazy. But for this, for me, more than any other show, proved why companies like BlockFi are so important for Bitcoin, bringing that layer of financial services into the space. BlockFi are doing this and they are killing it, and they've done it even without a bullshit token. They are the best in the sector. They're building a powerhouse of Bitcoin borrowing and lending. So if you need a crypto loan, whatever you want to buy, if you want to go on a holiday, you want to buy a flamethrower, you want to get a Cybertruck, if you've just got to pay the man, you got to pay your taxes, BlockFi have got you covered. But if you want to earn interest on your Bitcoin, Ether or GUSD, well, I'm a customer and I'm absolutely loving getting my interest every month. They have dropped minimum deposits. They have removed the early withdrawal penalty, and you can receive your interest payment in the currency of your choice. If you're interested in checking BlockFi out, I always say do your own research, then head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com.
You talk a lot about the stigma of the industry.
Yes.
We're talking about it like it's no big deal.
Right.
Inside, I'm melting because I don't work in the porn industry. But,
right.
But we're talking about it, it's like it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
How has stigmas changed? And what kind of issues are you still coming up against?
Well, it's definitely changed for the better. I mm-hmm. think that people are becoming a lot more accepting of porn. I think that the younger generation, who obviously grew up watching internet porn, they're more open about it. So there's definitely a trend towards people talking about it more. Just, you know, the idea that we're actually like creating porn for women, and we're opening up about how women can actually enjoy porn. Because before, porn was this dirty little secret that like your boyfriend or your husband hid from you. And if you found him watching it, that meant that you weren't good enough and he didn't love you because, you know, every time he masturbates, he should be fantasizing about you, which is insane. So that's been a big change. Yeah, so overall it's been good, but there's definitely still a stigma, and we come up across it in so many different ways. Financial, girls get their bank shut down. It's hard to get insurance. It's hard to get approved for a credit line, credit cards. The financial industry considers us a high-risk industry.
So is corporate stigma really less than social these days?
I would say it's both.
Okay.
But the corporate one is the one that, you know, hits your pocketbook. So that's the one that hurts the most, because the social stigma, like, you can find your community of people that are okay with what you're doing. But, you know, need banks to operate.
I would say that the social stigma feels like it's improved.
Yes.
We're in a better place than we are.
Yes. I think also social media has helped.
Yes. I would say the corporate stigma feels like it's got worse, but that might be just because I'm working in the Bitcoin world. I'm hearing more and more about it. You know, when something happens, somebody sends something to me, you know, I saw what happened the other week with Pornhub and PayPal. You know, I'm aware, maybe I'm more aware, but it just feels like your industry has to deal with a hell of a lot of fuckery for something that is a legal industry. Let's be very clear. This is a legal industry. And every time you deal with some form of censorship, my assumption is that ultimately it makes life more dangerous.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. I mean, just one ironic example is I was looking for a new podcast studio, and shockingly, there's a huge like vacuum of good full service podcast studios in Los Angeles, which is insane. So I found one that was beautiful. It was in downtown LA. It was at the top of like this skyscraper. You had this view behind you. It was absolutely gorgeous. I contacted them and I said, you know, I'd love to come look at your studio. It looks really great. You know, the pricing was good for me. And the guy said, absolutely, I would love that. And I'm like, okay, well, here's an example. Like, I sent him my YouTube channel. It's like, here's my show. Just so you have an idea of like what I do, and you know, I'll come in and we'll talk about it. And he gets back to me and he goes, oh, I see you have a lot of porn stars on your show. I don't think that's going to be okay. And I was like, excuse me? And he was like, yeah, we don't want your podcast in our studio because it doesn't go with our brand. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I understand. Because another hard thing that we deal with is trying to find locations that we can shoot porn in. A lot of people, like this is LA, right? So there's a lot of production houses, a lot of places that people rent out for all kinds of movies.
But there's a difference there, right? I can understand.
Totally. That's like, what I was about to say.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Know. I get that you don't want people having sex and coming all over your couch. I get that. Like, I don't even want people fucking in my house, and I shoot that for a living. But I can't even come into your podcast studio and talk about it. And the fact that he brought this up before he even knew what my podcast was about, the fact that he saw porn stars, like there's some dirty kind of creature, they're going to come in and leave like their slime all over the studio, or they're going to like, you know, randomly squirt all over the microphones. I mean, nobody gets naked on my show. We don't do anything sexual. We just talk about the industry.
Well, and
we talk about the stigma, ironically.
Well, yeah. And for my little time learning about the industry, they're probably the cleanest people.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because they have to be tested.
Yes, have to be tested. Also just like really great at hygiene. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm aware of that. Okay, so that's kind of annoying because that one's, they've just made a moral judgment there.
Yes.
They're just like, fuck you, you're porn.
Yes, and what made it so frustrating for me, and I actually said this to them, I said, my podcast is actually about trying to dispel the stigma around the adult industry. Like, I'm all about giving performers a voice and giving people a place to show the world like who they really are. Like, these are real people and this is a real job, and we're not like sex crazed lunatics. We're not dangerous. We're not criminals. And so the fact that this studio, which is where I was trying to deliver my message, won't have me because of the stigma that my podcast is. So I don't know, for some reason that bothered me more than the fact that like my workers' comp insurance just canceled me.
Yeah, so that was where I was first pointing in your direction. I saw your tweet the other week.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk through that?
Sure. So I signed up for workers' comp, and it was like a new program, like pay as you go. So my employees are on payroll, and I signed up with the Hartford Insurance Company, and they asked me what I did. I said photography, which is true. And they sent me a notice that my workers' comp was canceled effective immediately because they looked me up and they saw that I work in the adult industry, and they referenced like a bunch of links to websites like my social media, hollyrandall.com, et cetera, et cetera. And they said that they do not cover that kind of industry. And so they canceled me.
You dirty.
Immediately.
Yeah. It's because you're a dirty.
Dirty.
Dirty fucking porn producer. But why? But like, what's their reason?
What they said is they do not cover my kind of industry.
Okay.
That's the only reason they gave me.
And, you know, we've had, as we said, Pornhub. Mm-hmm. They've been prevented from accepting payments for from PayPal.
PayPal has always been anti-porn. You have to, I know a lot of performers' accounts who were shut down because they, you know, sold something sexual through their website or whatever, and PayPal found out and shut them down. We use PayPal, and we are so careful about what we put in the invoices.
Right, okay, okay.
Like, we use acronyms because I don't want to get shut down.
Okay, but the financial censorship, it's kind of consistent through the industry. Mm-hmm. How much of this is, say, a problem with the banks having to deal with just chargebacks because they're just fucking pissed off with it, and how much of it is to do with, again, just moral judgments?
I think a lot of it has to do with moral judgments. Chargebacks are... It depends on the business that you run, but chargebacks are generally pretty low. And, you know, Visa will only process cards for you for your website if your chargebacks are, you know, below like a certain percentage.
Okay.
You do have to pay like an annual fee to both Visa and MasterCard, as well as obviously the monthly percentages. So I don't think chargebacks are a huge problem. I've always kept them pretty low. Also too, like, and, you know, I can't speak directly for it because this is not what I do, but I know that, you know, they're careful about accepting payments from certain countries that have high, you know, mm-hmm. are high risk of fraud and that kind of thing. One example is, so when I first started my company, I actually started my corporation, I named it Holly Randall Productions. And I was trying to get a business credit card and I kept getting denied. And I couldn't figure it out because I had great credit.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, you know, I got denied again. And I think I was on the phone with the guy. And I called him. I said, look, you got to tell me, like, what is going on? Why am I being denied? And he said to me, he goes, well, what do you do? I said, well, I do photography. And he goes, but what specifically do you shoot? And I said, I shoot people. And he goes, see, we looked you up and we see that you shoot adult content. And we don't support those kinds of high-risk industries.
Again, but hold on. Why is it high risk?
I don't know. I have no idea.
See, I find it super interesting that you can have a legal industry, but companies can legally discriminate against you.
Right.
You know, I remember that incident. It turned out to be a whole load of bullshit, but with the cake company, who wouldn't make a cake
because right.
they were Christians. They wouldn't make a cake for the gay couple.
Right.
And it turns out it was a sting. They were going around to try and find someone. But the point being is that was seen as terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You've turned those down for making a cake. You shouldn't right. be doing that. You should not be discriminated against.
Right.
You should make them a cake. And I think they were prosecuted, right? Or they
right.
lost the case. So why at the same time can companies turn you away?
Because there's no legislation against discriminating against porn. And what politician is going to go and fight for the rights of sex workers? What politician is going to run on a campaign where they say, you know what, it's wrong to discriminate against people in porn. It's wrong to discriminate against sex workers.
It's not going to be a Republican.
No, definitely not. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, if you wanted to have the counter argument, one could say, well, people are not choosing to be gay, right? You're born gay. And people should not be prejudice against because of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But we chose to work in the adult industry. We chose a sex work. We could have become an English teacher. You know, we could have picked something else, but we decided to do this dirty little job. And so therefore we deserve to be discriminated against because we're all bad people and it's a bad industry and it's bad for America and it's ruining marriages and it's destroying children and it's destroying the world.
You are the devil.
Oh, you're the devil.
You are the devil. You don't seem like a bad person.
I'm not. I'm a great person.
So how do you get around it? Is it just a case of you have to be sneaky?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had to change the name of my corporation to a name I'm not going to mention.
Of course.
Because I don't want people. But I had to make it something really bland that sounded nothing like anything an adult. And, you know, when I apply for something, I don't say that I shoot porn. I say I'm a photographer. I've even created a fake, like, website for my corporation that makes it just look like I do headshots so that people, when they look me up, they're like, oh, like, boring headshots, like, move on.
But you always run the risk of being found out.
Oh, well, and I clearly was.
Yeah. And it's a real shame because the people who are making these decisions... I'm going to run an assumption that they're also jerking off to porn.
Absolutely. It's everybody's dirty little secret.
What is it, 98% of men?
I mean,
2% of liars.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's a good one. But, yeah, I mean, you know, absolutely. But people want to consume it, but they don't want to have any association with it.
So you can figure this all out, though. But as an individual working on their own, like an adult performer, is it the same problems for them, or do you think they're going to find it harder to get around this?
I mean, I don't know. I do know that, like, for example, one thing that, you know, and we all talk, right?
Yeah.
One thing, you do not bank with Chase. Okay. Chase loves to shut down porn accounts.
Fuck you, Chase.
Yeah. They. I've never banked with Chase. But Chase shuts down porn accounts all the time.
Okay.
So, like, avoid that bank. Okay. Yeah, I've heard all kinds of crazy stories. I've never had that happen to me, thank God.
There's an opportunity.
But I keep my personal bank account separate from my business bank account.
Right, okay.
Completely different banks, because I'm afraid if my business
connects
account gets shut down, I don't want them to connect it to my personal account.
There's an opportunity here for some kind of innovative leader, open-minded bank operator, who potentially may think, well, I don't want to support this because it gets in the press, we might lose our retail customers, but could create a separate division, completely disconnected. Like, how big is the industry? How many billions?
Oh, I don't know. You know, people throw those numbers around.
But it's not a small industry.
It's not a small industry. It's a huge industry.
I might start a bank. So how much in your... You say your circles talk, because what us Bitcoiners, we whenever we hear of an opportunity, we're on it like a... Just fucking on it. But we're always looking for, like, where can Bitcoin be a solution? Because it's censorship-resistant money. So sex, drugs... criminals. Is there much of the talk in these circles about using Bitcoin? Or, you know, I'll allow you to say cryptocurrency, and then if you say them, I'll say their shit. But is there any talk about this?
I mean, I think I've heard some here and there, but I think the idea of cryptocurrency is Bitcoin. Is so beyond any of our grasp. I mean, I am not like a financial person by any means. So if you come to me and you're like, you should run your company through Bitcoin, I'd be like, I don't know what that means. Well,
that's where we haven't made it easy enough.
Right.
I mean, because what it means is, I think it's more for the acceptance of money. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted to, I don't know, say you had a favorite porn performer, but you're married and you don't want it on the credit card bill, and you wanted to, I don't know, buy a movie or one of her old pairs of socks, you could pay in Bitcoin and it can just go straight to her, and that's not going to be traceable.
Right.
So I think that would potentially be useful, but I think somebody perhaps from our side needs to spend a bit more time with people from your side and create tools that are easy to use.
There you go.
That are helpful.
There you go. You just made yourself $1 million. Because people want to buy porn and they want to spend money on it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they don't want it. A lot of them, they don't want it on their credit card bill. And that's why we're very careful. You know, on every adult website you go to, you say discreet billing. And we're going to make sure that we're going to put some name on your credit card bill that's not going to sound like a porn company.
So I'm not going to do this. I say I would. I'm just going to hand the idea out to somebody else. But one of the other things I've tried to explore and haven't really found a great or solid answer for yet is that we have a bunch of people watching porn. Mm-hmm. I assume people watch more porn per minute, more minutes of porn a month than they watch Hollywood movies. Mm-hmm. But I wonder whether they offer the same amount of respect or thought for the people making the films as, say, a Hollywood film. Mm-hmm. So the one I always think about, I've just watched this documentary about Harvey Weinstein. He's obviously a piece of shit. Like, go fuck yourself, you're an asshole. He got immediately ostracized from the industry. I read about things in porn, and it feels like it's different.
Yeah.
It feels like I've read about certain people who, I'm not going to name names, or I can do it, it doesn't matter, but there have been accusations that feel very similar to a Harvey Weinstein accusation. Mm-hmm. But not the same similar treatment. Like, Harvey Weinstein's done for the rest of his life.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, some actors who maybe have taken things too far are still in the industry. So is that a problem with the industry? Is that a problem with consent? Is that a problem with production houses? Where does that all lie? A big, messy subject.
That's such a complicated question, because I know exactly what you're talking about, and this has fallen on male producers, it's fallen on male actors, and... You know, this call-out culture is great in some ways, and social media has been really useful in the ways that it has finally, you know, brought to light some terrible practices that have happened on set that, you know, you've heard about, but nothing ever happened with them. So there's been, but there's also been, you know, there's the court of social media and then there's like the court. And there's been some producers that have had accusations made against them that turned out to possibly not be true, but it's unsure. There are some male performers that have had accusations made against them that, again, there's certain male performers, we're probably thinking about the same person, but I'm not going to say his name, that some girls have had issues working with, right? They've said they were too rough. They did not stop when they asked them to stop, or they felt uncomfortable asking them to stop. And then there are some girls who absolutely love that male performer and they want to work with him all the time. So I think the issue really, I think it kind of always falls on the producer. Like, you need to make sure that you're providing a set that is safe, that is openly communicative, and that the model feels that she has a voice. And I've always advocated that. I mean, you know, I'm a woman. I was taught by a woman who also shot porn. And our main criteria has always been that the model feels safe, that she feels sexy, and that she has a good time. Mm-hmm. So I have yet to come across a girl who has said that she's ever been on my set and not felt that she could say something and has not felt that she, you know, could call cut, or that she was in a situation that was, I don't want to say dangerous, but, you know, that crossed her boundaries.
Well, is essentially the control in the scene, does the man tend to have control in the scene because they are the man? I'm not sure how to articulate this, but
are you talking about the male performer?
Yeah, but like
it depends on the scene.
But can you have a scene where it's the same for a male, that it can be going too far for him,
where the woman pushes him too far? I mean, I suppose so.
It doesn't feel like it.
Well, if you're talking about maybe like a femdom scene, I think like ultimately a lot of times it comes down to like penetration.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
You know?
Yeah. Like, am I in pain?
Right.
Stop fucking hurting me. I need a break, or this is too much.
Right, exactly. So I do think that all of these things that have come to light lately have been really helpful in basically making the industry wake up and make us all realize that we really need to talk about consent more on set. And like I said, I've always tried to provide a safe set for people. Mm-hmm. And I've never had a problem where a girl, I mean, I don't shoot really hardcore stuff anyways. My stuff tends to be more romantic. It tends to be more sensual anyhow. I'm not, you know, trying to shoot really hardcore scenes where the guy like slaps her in the face, chokes her and stuff like that. But I am so much more aware of how there needs to be discussion about boundaries on set before we shoot. I used to never do that, you know, but I would watch the scene. And obviously if it felt like the girl was uncomfortable, I would, you know, stop and be like, are you okay? And I think also too, because I'm a woman and because of the kind of environment that I create, I think I'm in tune. And I think the girl feels like she has the power to call cut or to speak up. Almost every time that a girl has said that she felt like she couldn't say anything, that she had to continue the scene because she felt pressured to, even though she didn't want to, almost every single time there hasn't been another female on set. They've been surrounded by men.
Yeah. And I've also heard that some girls have felt pressured to do scenes because if they don't do it, they might not get paid.
Right.
Or they get fucked around by the producer. And exactly. It's a very intimidating.
Or their agent will yell at them. There's also a lot of cases of bad agents pushing girls into doing scenes that they're not ready for. Scenes that they don't want to do. They don't get the right information before the scene. I mean, I know girls who've shown up to set thinking they're just there to do like a boy-girl scene and it's like a gangbang. Yeah. I mean, you need to tell them how many dicks are going to be there. It's important.
Yeah.
Like, the dick quota needs to be
clear. I would want to know that.
Yeah. One needs to know that. One needs to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
So, but I am like, and I think a lot of people are like this now, we're very conscious about making sure that the performers discuss boundaries and consent, because sometimes boundaries aren't even necessarily about if it's going to hurt you or, you know, if it's going to be uncomfortable. Sometimes it's about like what might be triggering for a performer, you know? I mean, I know performers who can't do anal because they had a bad experience with anal when they were younger and it triggers back those memories, and that's somewhere they don't want to go. So sometimes it's whatever it is. And it's important to me, and it's become more important to my clients as well, that all of this is very more respectfully done.
How much of this comes down to the financial pressures of the industry, or are these just fucking shitty people?
I think now it's more shitty people. Right. I think back when, you know, everybody was trying to shoot really hardcore scenes because that was the thing, like back at the beginning of the internet, like we were talking about, and girls were feeling pressured to have to shoot really hardcore scenes in order to make money, in order to get hired.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes if girls, and this is really sad, but sometimes if a girl's not like that good looking,
she's gotta go further.
She might have to go further, right, and do more hardcore stuff that she wouldn't necessarily want to do, where like a beautiful girl with like a perfect body could probably just stick to like, you know, the more softcore scenes.
Facts of life. Yeah.
But now, I mean, also too, because models have so much more power with the advent of these new platforms of personal content monetization, where models can sell their own content, where they can cam, where they can sell their Snapchat directly to their fans, all that kind of stuff. Now models are making money independently, so they have a lot more control over their careers because they're not so financially dependent on booking these jobs. And so that, I think, has also made a huge difference.
I would have thought, though, shitty studios and shitty producers and shitty agents wouldn't last because everyone knows each other. And if somebody's having a bad time, it's like, well, dump that fucking agent, go to this guy. He's brilliant. He looks after me. Or this, you know, not just him, but her. Or, you know, this.
Well, also, well, the thing is with agents, too, is agents often get these young, naive girls to sign these contracts that they don't read. They don't realize, you know, 5 years. Oh, you're going to have me sign a contract for 5 years? You think I'm going to last that long? That's so great. They don't think about it. And then when they're unhappy with their agent and they want to get out, these agents threaten them with lawsuits and that kind of thing. And these women are not educated in law in any way. They don't have a lawyer who they can talk to. And, you know, they get scared. They get scared to fight them.
So it sounds like there's still unsolved problems, though.
Oh, absolutely. Because
you're saying it's like it's a discussion, but it's unsolved.
I think it's gotten a lot better. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot. There used to be a lot more shady agents than there are now. Right. There are some really wonderful agents now, but you know, these things definitely come up. And the adult industry is actively trying to provide support and resources where girls can go and get the information that they need, like the FSC, the Free Speech Coalition, the Inspire program. I had Lotus Lane on my podcast, and she talked about, you know, the programs that they're trying to provide to help performers, such as legal advice. I mean, I think that's one thing that a lot of performers need, and legal advice is expensive. And so finding, you know, somebody who can give you advice for free, or maybe, you know, at some kind of discounted rate, I think is really, really helpful, because knowledge is power.
Are there like centralized, is there like a centralized body for this, for the industry?
Free Speech Coalition would be it.
It.
Yeah, the closest thing. And they're trying to really build out their program, but you know, they also need more money. They're terribly underfunded.
Right.
And there's so much that we need to do to make the adult industry better. It's a work in progress for sure.
Sounds like you just need more women leadership positions.
Which is happening. I mean, if you look at the AVN awards, the nominees, all of majority of the top director nominees are women.
That's in Vegas in January.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and go.
Oh, you should go.
I want to go.
It'll be fun. I'll be actually doing my podcast live from there, from the Adult Time booth.
There's an Adult Time booth.
Yeah. So Adult Time is the new Netflix of porn.
What?
You haven't heard of Adult Time?
No. I don't really watch this dirty shit.
So, yeah, Adult Time is the company's Gamma. And okay. They've, you know, there's always been a talk about needing one, like, centralized platform for porn, because a lot of people don't want to join a bunch of different websites of to course, get what yeah. they want, which is why, you know, the tube sites have become so popular.
Well, look at Spotify and Netflix. They've killed it, right?
Right, absolutely. So Adult Time is basically the Netflix of porn, and they've been signing up a lot of studios. My podcast is one of them. I have my own channel on there. And they pay you, you know, a basically per view, and you join Adult Time and you get access to all of these content, all this content from all these different studios. And so far it looks like it's working. It was just a big gamble a lot of people were not willing to take for a long time, because if you failed, it would be a spectacular failure. because that's a lot of money invested in that.
That's a beautiful looking website.
Absolutely. Gamma is like one of the big, so there's like the big companies now are obviously MindGeek, who owns Pornhub and Brazzers and Digital Playground and Twisties, who I shoot for. And then there's Gamma. And Gamma is ironically, they're both based in Montreal.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think they could operate without banking for that kind of size of operation.
Yeah. Well, MindGeek was able to. I don't know if you've listened to The Butterfly Effect by John Ronson.
I think I might have. I think.
And that was about, specifically about tube sites and about how it changed the industry. And the butterfly effect that free porn has had on society. It's, if you haven't listened to it, you need to. It's so good.
I'm trying to think. So Gustavo from XBiz.
Yes.
I think he pointed me in that direction. Yeah. It sounds familiar, but I think I might not have listened to it yet.
Yeah, it's really good.
Right, I'll check that one out. Well, that's positive for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
That makes the industry seem more professional. That's obviously a positive for everyone, especially if they're paying you per view.
Right.
You just need a fuckload of people to sign up.
Right.
All right, so cool. Look, we've done very well here. I haven't gone too red, I don't think. What else in the industry is like important for you? What have I not covered, not asked, that you think, because this is going to go to an audience of people who probably consume porn but don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an opportunity to talk to them about things that you want them to be aware of about the industry or things they should care about.
Well, and again, you know, not to keep plugging my podcast, but
I'm definitely checking out your podcast.
The reason that I did it was because I wanted to give the industry a voice that wasn't skewed by the biased perspective that mainstream media has. So often when the adult industry is covered in some documentary or some news channel, there's always that skewed bias coming from like a porn is bad angle. And I wanted to come from an insider's perspective and talk to people in the industry about what their life in the industry is really like, the good and the bad. It's not all, you know, I mean, I think as you know, with how honest I've been about the issues that we face, it's not perfect by any means.
But there are no perfect industries.
No, of course not. I think that at least we're very openly aware of our shortcomings, and I feel like we're really trying to fix them. So I really want people to know that these are real people. And it's so interesting because whenever I, like, for example, my crew, almost every single one of like my assistants, my DP, cameramen, they don't work in porn. Like, they work in mainstream and they work in porn only for me. And their idea of what porn was like before they came to work for me and now what they know it to be is drastically different, because the people in it are generally really great. Like, porn performers are awesome people. They're funny, they're intelligent, they're irreverent, they're, you know, John Ronson, actually, he came on my show and he was talking about, you know, his initial biases. You know, he's an award-winning journalist before he came into the industry, but, you know, did The Butterfly Effect and met so many people in it. He's like, you know, and everybody, it kind of reminds me of this motley of characters from like an off-Broadway show, which I thought was kind of like a great way to describe us. You know, we're all different kinds of people, and we're all maybe, you know, I mean, our jobs are strange and we're all unique in our own way, but like, there's some really great characters. And I also think there's a lot of like deep camaraderie between performers in the industry because we are the black sheep of the entertainment industry. And because we face so much outside stigma, there's like a real love and caring between all of us. It's like a little fucked up family, and it's really quite charming.
I think it's a really beautiful way to end things.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed getting to know some people in the industry and learning about it.
Yeah.
Pleasure to meet you as well.
Thank you.
And thank you for giving me your time,
of course.
I know you how busy you guys are. But you should let people know exactly how and where to find you.
Well, you can find me on Instagram and on Twitter, just at Holly Randall. That's RANDALL. Also, I have my podcast is Holly Randall Unfiltered. So you can just find that on any podcast platform, or you can go to my website, hollyrandallunfiltered.com. I have a YouTube channel. I have a Facebook group. Also too, just kind of randomly, I was in a documentary directed by Rashida Jones that's streaming on Netflix called Hot Girls Wanted Turned On. It's part of a 6-part anthology series. My episode is episode 1, Women on Top, and it covers myself and the other female director that I mentioned, Erica Lust, who's like a feminist porn director out of Barcelona, who's doing some really great stuff. And they also interview my mom. So it's a kind of a great way to see like kind of where I come from and like the, you know, the place that I came from.
I saw that on Netflix last night. I didn't watch it. It popped up when I was like flicking through something to see.
Yeah, oh, wow. Random.
So,
yeah.
All right, that will be what I'll be watching tonight. Well, listen, look, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
I can't wait to get this out to the Bitcoiners. And look, I wish you the best and I hope we'll do this again sometime.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, take care.
You too.
All right. What did you think of that? Did you enjoy that? I didn't think when I started out on this podcast journey that at some point I would be discussing Bitcoin alongside certain sexual preferences in porn. Never thought that would happen, but here we are. And yes. Yeah, good one, Holly. Thank you for taking me through some of that stuff. I wasn't really prepared for some of the things we got into, but, you know, I'm glad we did. I'm glad I did this interview. It's a bit different discussing this from the likes of Taproot and Schnorr Signatures. But this is clearly an industry that could benefit hugely from a censorship-resistant form of money. So I think it's important that we shine a light on this industry and we shine a light on financial censorship and what the people in the industry experience. And let's be honest, it's fucking bullshit. You know, this is a legal industry. You know, this is a legal industry, but companies are blocking workers from in the industry access financial services, which ultimately makes their lives and makes what they're doing more difficult and potentially more dangerous. So I think we need to say what it is. It is bullshit, especially as I think something like 98% of men watch porn and I think the other 2% are liars. So yes, I think we should be standing up for that. I also know there's been a big growth in pornography for women. I think when I did the research, the number's above 70%, but you know, whatever it is, a lot of people are watching a lot of porn. And I think if we're doing this, we need to consider the workers and we want them to be safe and we want them to get paid. So yes, let's shine a light in it. Let's try and support them as best we could. I also want to say a massive thanks for Holly for coming on the show. I did really enjoy the conversation. She is a natural herself and she also has a podcast, which I recommend checking out because it's very good. I will definitely be exploring this subject a bit more over the next couple of months. I've got a couple of interviews in the bag. I'm not sure whether they're going to go out on here or my other podcast, but yes, keep an eye out for that. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this. You know, as ever, if you've got any feedback, you can hit me up. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Also, thank you, as ever, to everyone who supports the show. As we're now 2 years in, I do say this every week, but thank you, whatever you do, whether you are leaving me a review, whether you're a guest, a sponsor, even if you're one of those idiots who just trolls me online and bitches about everything I do, thank you anyway. You know, some of the trolls have changed the way I do things. Some of you, you're promoting my work. But either way, thank you. And yeah, I really appreciate everything. But if you do want to support the show, if you're a regular listener, there is a section on my website. Just head over to whatbitcoindid.com, click on the support section. That will explain everything you can do. Also, I'm off to Uruguay later today. I'm going to be flying via Argentina. I'm going to be there for La BitConf, and then I'm going to be heading out to Bolivia and back to Argentina. It would be great to meet up with some of you. It would be great to find out what's going on with Bitcoin in South America. My first time visiting the continent as well. So very, very cool. Anyway, listen, I hope you all have a great week. As ever, if you've got any questions, hit me up. My email is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.